Good morning. Good to be with you again. Yes, I'm, as you've heard, I'm Andrew. I think last time I came, actually, my wife came with me, but she's involved in the church this morning in Gloucester, which is where we have lived for the last 6 or 7 years. But it's good to be with you again this morning. You've given me a huge passage to look at. We won't be able to look at it all in great detail. It's very well known. And as you continue your journey through Hebrews, and this is what we're going to be looking at this morning, Hebrews, persevering faith. Persevering faith. And I don't know about you. I don't know if at times, not just in, I wasn't thinking just of the Christian faith, but are there times when you feel like giving up? You're doing something and you think, no, this is just too difficult. And I guess it's true for us all at times, isn't it? We do feel like giving up all sorts of things. We'd like to give up work, you know, maybe. I'd like to give up work at the moment. We'd like to, you know, give up on this particular project that we're trying to do at home, you know, where, you know, we're trying to sort something out and it's not going very well, and we just feel like, oh, I wish I'd never started this. Last year, actually, Kim and I were in Scotland on holiday, and I'd had my hip operation done previous year, and I hadn't really done much serious exercise since having it done. And we were staying right next to one of the mountains, one of the, one of the bends, not Ben Nevis, but one of the other bends, over 3,000 feet. And the mountain literally started, the hotel we were staying in was right, literally at the foot of the mountain. And from there, the mountain just went straight up. It was quite a steep climb, but we thought we could do this. We used to do a fair amount of walking, and it was an absolute killer, and we got, you know, it was lovely going, in terms of the weather was fine going up for most of it, and then when we got towards the top, the mist came down, we couldn't see a thing. And so we didn't know how far we were from the top, and it got more and more difficult, and Kim said, you know, that, you know, come on, this is, we just can't carry on, we just need to go back. And I said, let's just at least let's get over this next hump. And so we pulled ourselves up over this, yeah, literally, over this next section. And just as we got over this section, we heard somebody shout, hooray, we're here. And we realized that actually, although we couldn't see it, we'd actually got to the top. And so we were so glad that we didn't just give up just those last few hundred meters before and walk down. We really did feel like giving up. Well, as you probably know, the book of Hebrews is written to probably predominantly Jewish believers, and it's written because they were thinking of giving up. Could be for all sorts of reasons. I guess it's quite likely to be the pressures that they were coming under, the persecution that they were suffering, and so they were thinking, let's just give up, let's go back to just being Jewish people and following the Jewish faith. They were in danger of compromising, danger of drifting. And this, whoever wrote this letter, we don't know who wrote it, this epistle, writes to them to encourage them to persevere. Let's just read, as I said, let's read first few verses of chapter 12, Hebrews 12, 1-3. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In the previous chapter, which you perhaps looked at, not too long ago, chapter 10, verse 32, he reminds them of how faithful they'd been, how they'd trusted in previous times, even when things were really difficult. And he says in verse 32, remember those earlier days. And in verse 35, so don't throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you've done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. We need to keep going. Run with perseverance the race that he's marked out for us. And our races, our track, if you like, is not the same. Each of us runs a slightly different course, but each of us need to persevere. And as you probably heard, it's a marathon, not a sprint, isn't it? Sometimes people can be really excited, particularly when we first become Christians and everything is wonderful and everything seems to fit into place. But it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And at times it's hard to keep going, but we need to persevere. You probably know, you've probably seen this guy before. Seen this chap before? It's a very poor picture, isn't it? But there is a reason why it's such a poor. All the photos of this guy are not very good. But if you don't know his name is John Aquari. This is the Mexico Olympics, 1968. And John was from Tanzania, and he was running the marathon. And after about 20 miles, he got cramp, and he fell. And he dislocated his knee, and he damaged his shoulder. And he should have stopped, but he didn't. Even though the stewards are saying, you need to stop running, he refused, and he kept running. And he comes into the stadium, that's him coming into the stadium, just as the light is fading, all the events are finished, there's just one medal ceremony going on, and there's just one TV crew that are there taking the pictures of the medal ceremony, and they see this chap come into the stadium, limping. There is a YouTube video of it, and people gather around, and they applaud him as he comes in. He's an hour after everybody else has finished, and he's interviewed by this TV crew, and they say, "Why on earth? Why did you carry on? Why did you keep going? You were last. You're there's no point." And this is what he said. My country did not send me 5,000 miles to start the race. They sent me 5,000 miles to finish the race. He persevered. He kept going. And because of that, that's why many of you may have heard of it before, because he's become one of those people that are used in talks to encourage people in their, whatever it is, in their business life or whatever else. Because he finished the race. He finished well. And that's what we're called to do. To finish well. I was reading something this week. It said, old age is a continuous series of losses. Old age is a continuous series of losses, and it's true, isn't it? Losses in terms of physical health, mental health, losses of friends, losses of opportunity, and you could go on and on and on. A guy in our previous church, a retired vicar, one of his favourite phrases was, old age is not for wimps. And it's true. Even I'm beginning to realise that it's not easy. And yet, we're told to keep going and we're told to keep growing in our faith. So that while the outer, as it was, falls away and gradually falls off and the bits fall off and all the rest of it, that we should be inwardly renewed. And as Paul was saying, how that we should, that process of change, of becoming more like Jesus, should be going on at the same time as the outer is falling apart. But finishing well is not just for us older ones. People fall away and drift all through, don't they? So easy. You know, I go fishing. I'm not going to use any fishing illustrations today, but, you know, I'm sitting there and sometimes the river looks so calm. And you think, you know, that there, you know, it's just still. And then until something, or my float or whatever else, goes in the water. And then you realize, actually, this water is really moving quite fast. And it only drifts in one direction. It only goes that way. And that's true for us. If we drift, if we're not actively seeking to persevere in our faith, we will drift. And we can only drift one way. And that's away from God, away from Jesus. That's what happens. And that's what Paul is, not Paul, though we don't think it's Paul, but whoever's writing this letter is concerned about for these people here. So how do we finish well? How do we keep going? How do we persevere? Well, there's three things we're going to pick out here from those first few verses of chapter 12, and we'll refer back into 11. And the first one is this. Well, there we are. Finish the race. That's what we need to do. How? First of all, the encouragement and example of others. He talks, doesn't he, in that first verse. We're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. And I want to picture, I don't run. I need to run, but I don't run. But my wife used to run. So even she's given up these days. And there were occasions when she was running a race, and I'd go on there, and the children, we'd go along, and we'd stand on the roadside, and we'd cheer, you know, her, but also all the other people doing the road race as well. And I have this, as we read this verse here about being surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, I have this picture of running a long distance race and the people on the sidelines, the people on the pavements cheering us on. But as we run the race, as we're running the race, as we look up, we see that we recognize these people's faces. And as we look at them, we think, wow, that's Paula Radcliffe there. And that, well, that's that Paralympian athlete. And yeah, I recognize these people. And as we're running, we see that all these people actually are also runners. The people that are cheering us on are people that are also athletes. And they're saying things like, you can do it. Keep going. We did it. It is worth it. Keep running. And that's what the writer here is talking about. He's talking about witnesses, people who are giving witness to the fact that they have completed the race. And they're encouraging us to do the same. In the New Living Translation, it talks in that verse, it talks about them being witnesses to the life of faith. Who's an encouragement and an example to you? I guess the reality is, if we were to stop just for a moment, I guess each of us could think of people, past and present, who've been an encouragement and an example to us by their faith and have encouraged our faith. So I think of Auntie Doris. She wasn't my auntie, but everyone called her Auntie. Auntie Doris. I used to think of her as a little old lady, but she was probably only in her 60s when I thought of her as a little old lady, and I'm there now as well. But Auntie Doris didn't drive. She had a bicycle. And you see Auntie Doris cycling around. Auntie Doris cycling around, going to visit people. She got a disabled husband herself, but Auntie Doris would get on her bike and go and visit anybody that needed a visit. And she'd encourage them and she'd pray with them. Auntie Doris ran the kids' club every week for the kids from the local housing estate. A great example, great encouragement to me when I was in my 20s. Or I think of Albert Watson, my youth leader, Covenanter leader, when I was a lad. And like most lads, you know, not doing anything particularly bad, but Albert would spend time with us, not just in the club, but outside. That's how I started fishing, because Albert said, "Do you want to come fishing?" And he'd take groups of us with him fishing, even though we were more trouble than we were worth, and used to mess about, and used to spend half his time sorting us out and all the rest of it. Shop steward at British Leyland. Not easy to be a Christian at British Leyland in the days of Red Robbo and that stuff. But a man of faith. He's in the crowd. Both those people are now there. They're alongside the road. Their example is encouraging me to keep going. And I guess for each of us, we could think of people like that. And in Hebrews chapter 11, the writer to the Hebrews mentions to these Jewish believers, he points back to lots of people that they knew about from their history. People who were people of faith. People who were examples. People who in the decisions they made demonstrated faith, demonstrated their trust in God. And so he points back to these people. He calls them the ancients in chapter 11, verse 1. If you go back to the beginning of chapter 11, he says, "Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see." This is what the ancients were commended for. They weren't all old people, but they were people who trusted God. And having faith is really important. It's essential. And we read that in verse 6 of chapter 11, because it simply says, "And without faith, it is impossible to please God." Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Sometimes we think of all the other things we do, and we can think, you know, coming to church and helping here and doing that. And those are often very good things and things that we should. But those in themselves, those actions, divorced from faith, don't please God. You can't please God by the things we do just in themselves. It's only if we do that, if we're doing those things because of our faith and our trust in Him, that we please God. So without faith, we don't please God. But what is faith? Well, we've just read what faith is in that first verse, haven't we? Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we don't see. What don't we see? Well, we don't see God. Well, I don't. Don't know if you've ever seen Him, but certainly most people do not see God. You need faith to believe in God. You see, I can't prove God to you, and you can't prove God to me. We can look at evidence for Him. We can look at creation. We can look at all sorts of things. We can look at our morality. Why have we got a moral code if there isn't a God? Why do we do certain things? And we could point to lots of evidences. I mean, the world, the universe in which we live is tuned to the nth degree. For it to happen without a designer is incredible. It'd be like, the one example I remember hearing about, it's like a whirlwind blowing through a scrap metal yard. And what you're left with is a Boeing 747. That's the sort of probability of the earth being as it is without there being a designer. Everything would have had to happen in that millisecond after the Big Bang. Everything would have happened very, very quickly. And they would have all, over more than 50 things, I'm told, would have had to happen in sequence, immediately, for the earth to be as it is today. So there are many things we can point to, but we still can't prove that there's a God. Faith means that we have to believe that there is. And secondly, we have to believe the rewards those that seek him. We have to be certain of what we don't see, and we have to be sure of what we hope for. What do we have a hope for? We have a hope that there is a God who will reward us and will reward faith. We have a hope that this God rewards those who earnestly seek him, because he's a God of love, a God that created us to know him, given us everything to enjoy. And these people in Hebrews 11 had that faith. We call them the heroes of faith, don't we? Don't know if they look like that. It looks like some Hollywood movie there, doesn't it, really? Heroes of faith, as we run through chapter 11. We're not going to really look at any of them, but I'd encourage you to read the chapter for yourself, and I'm sure you've read it before. We had reference to one or two of them earlier on in terms of Noah and Abraham and whatever else. These people were people of faith because they believed that God was real, and they believed that God would reward them for doing what they thought he wanted them to do. And that is faith. And because of their faith, they pleased God in the way that they lived and the decisions that they made. Can people see our faith by the way we live and the choices we make? Can they see our faith? Not just that we're nice people, although sometimes that will inevitably be perhaps the way they do look at things, but can they see that we have a faith in God, and that we're living in a way that proves, that demonstrates rather, that we believe that he'll reward us for living that way, that there will be something wonderful to come in the future? Well, these people in Hebrews 11 were heroes of faith, and we could look at Noah, you know, who built the ark. They acted in ways that showed that even though they couldn't work it all out, even though it wasn't all clear and obvious, even though it wasn't definite the outcomes to what they were doing, they acted in that way, didn't they? So Noah built the ark, even though there was no water. They lived in the middle of a landmass. What was the point of building an ark if you're living in the middle of a landmass? Abraham called to go to a place, even though he didn't know where he was going. They acted on these calls, these commands from God on their lives, and we could look at each of them. And in verse 13, if we were to read through, it says all of these people still were living by faith when they died. They didn't receive the things that they promised. Abraham was still living in a tent when he died. God had promised him this land, but this land, when he died, was still occupied by the people. All he was doing, he was living in his tent. He was still a nomad, a wanderer. But it says these people were looking forward to something else. Their eyes were set on the future. They were not looking back. They were ready to act on their expectations and their understanding of the future, and these people pleased God, and their lives pointed to God. But just a couple of things. These heroes of faith were not perfect people. They didn't please God because they lived perfect lives. They pleased God because of their faith. A lot of them made some terrible mistakes and did things that they shouldn't have done. Twice, not once, but twice, Abraham said his wife was his sister and allowed her to be taken by other men to become, so that she'd become their wife. God prevented the outcomes of that, but Abraham was prepared to allow that to happen to save his skin. His son Isaac did exactly the same. Samson, who's mentioned, was hardly an upstanding, moral, virtuous person, was he? He did some terrible things. David, as we know, great king, greatest king. Adultery, and then effectively murders the husband. These people were not perfect people, but they pleased God because of their faith. That's an encouragement to us, isn't it? Because the truth is, we're not perfect people either. We mess up, don't we? Regularly. But we can exercise faith. A faith that says, I'm righteous not because of what I've done. I'm righteous because of what Jesus has done for me. And it didn't always have happy endings. Some of these people, their lives, things worked out for them. Abraham became a very wealthy man. Noah was saved in the boat, and we could work our way through them. But it also says in verses 35 onwards that some of these people were tortured, beaten, stoned, executed, destitute, ill-treated, homeless. These heroes of faith didn't mean that their lives always worked out and had wonderfully happy endings. They didn't. They didn't. And there are many Christians today in many parts of the world. We had a guy with us a few weeks ago, who works in North Korea. Christians in North Korea suffer terribly. The treatment is abominable. But they please God because of their faith. Their faith. And that's an encouragement to us, isn't it, as well? Okay, moving on quite quickly. That's only point one, but they've moved quickly through points two and three. So he's told to look at the people in the past, their example and their encouragement. But then it also says that in the end of verse 1 of chapter 12, let us throw everything off that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run the race marked out for us. Run with perseverance the race marked out for us. We're told to get rid of two things. We're told to throw off everything that hinders, and secondly, the sin that so easily entangles. Sin. Sin entangles. Sin wraps itself around our legs and trips us up, and we crash to the ground. We need to be careful. Sin will ruin our race. Do you know people whose races have come to an end because of sin? The truth is, we do, don't we? And it's only by the grace of God that we're not also in that same category. I know a person at the moment who became a Christian, but he's now got into a relationship that isn't right. And he's going to come crashing, he is coming crashing down. Be careful of sin. If we recognize that we are in sin, we need to repent. We need to come back to God and ask his forgiveness. And we need to change our direction. And then there are things that aren't sin, things that are not bad, but they're not helpful. The things that Paul talks about being permissible but not beneficial. There are things in our life that they're not wrong in themselves, but they can so easily cause us to be distracted and to get into difficulties, because we're making them more important than they should be. And they can be all sorts of good things. They can even be our family, our children, our job, Things like that. Things that are not bad in themselves, but if they start taking the place of Jesus in our lives, they will cause us problems. It's a little while ago now, just as a very simple illustration. I was walking along the street. I saw a pretty girl walking along the other side of the street. My eyes were diverted to her, and I walked straight into a lamppost. It's a good example, isn't it? Being distracted and facing the consequences. I don't think my wife was with me, thank goodness. Well, I wouldn't have, if my wife was with me, I wouldn't have been looking, I'm sure. So we need to be disciplined. And thirdly, we need to have a focus. And that focus needs to be Jesus. As we've already read and sung about today, let's fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Other people can inspire us. Other people can be an example to us, and God intends that to be the case. But more than anything else, we need to look to Jesus. We need to look at him. And we do that primarily by reading about him in the Gospels and meditating on what we see there. Because the more we read about him and understand that, the more we see that what John wrote about him is true, that his life was full of grace and truth. There is nobody, there has never been anybody like him. And as we see him, see what he's like, our hearts are also drawn towards him. We begin to love him, or continue to love him, when we see what he's like. But as the writer here also points out, he is the author of our faith. He is the one who is the source of our salvation. That's why we need to look to him. And secondly, he's the perfecter of our faith. He's the one who will bring it to completion. He's the one who's working in us, changing us, making us more like himself. I guess you recognise that guy now on the right because he was on Sports Personality of the Year. But maybe before that you might not have done. You maybe recognise the lady on the left as Dina Asher-Smith. And the guy on the right is John Blackie, her coach. He's been her coach since she was 8 years old. And when she won her 200 metres in the World Championships, one of the first things she did was to talk about this man, John Blackie, and I think he got Coach of the Year at the Sports Personality of the Year. Jesus is in us, he's changing us, he's working with us, and this is what she says about this man. He finds joy in supporting me and the others helping us to fulfill our potential. I trust him because he would never let me do something that would not be good for me. If John says I can do something, I can do it. He knows me inside out and what I need to do to perform well. When I make a mistake, he does not get angry. He just encourages me to do what I can do. I credit everything I do to John. If you wanted to write a wonderful passage about the work of the Holy Spirit, I don't think you could write much better than that. He's with us all the time. He encourages us. He knows us through and through. When we make mistakes, when we mess up, he still loves us. He still says you can do it. He still says you can get up and walk by faith. God is working in us, giving us the desire and the power to do what pleases him. Philippians 2, verses 12 and 13. Let's finish the race, shall we? Let's keep going. And I know it's not always easy. You don't know my life and I don't know yours. And we know at times it's hard. And there's much that would discourage. And there's plenty that would distract. Let's persevere with the race that's marked out for us. Because when we finish the race, the rewards are unimaginable. When this guy finished his race, after they took one of the two pictures, He had 2 weeks of treatment in Mexico City. He went back to Tanzania. The rest of the team had already gone. And when he arrived at the airport in Dar es Salaam, there was no one to welcome him. He said they were only interested in those that had won medals. And I hadn't won. But he's become a hero. You'll find him quoted in what I quoted to you earlier. You'll find that cropping up in all sorts of places. And when we get there, there will be somebody to welcome us. And if we've run the race with perseverance that he's marked out for us, then he, the creator of the universe, will say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Let's keep going. Let's be an example and an encouragement to others as well.